Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Glad you'd be with us here on a Tuesday. Hey, we're going to start this hour with some good news. Yesterday we talked about Ryan Newman, the NASCAR driver who's in that absolutely horrific crash at the Daytona 500 on the final lap, where his car was hit, went sideways at the wall, went sideways, went upside down, was T-boned by another driver. It was skidding across. Sparks were flying. The car actually caught on fire as it skidded down into the infield. He was rushed to an area hospital. He was in serious condition, although no life-threatening injuries. Now the news is that he is talking to his family and the hospital staff. So that is good news. But yet, once again, a reminder about how dangerous auto racing is. But I thought Ron made a really good point yesterday, and one that has sort of kind of been floating around now, that about 20 years ago, the sport lost its most iconic driver in the history of the sport in Dale Earnhardt. And since that tragedy, this NASCAR has done everything it possibly can to study safety, to study the effects of safety, and to put it into some sort of context as to how, you know, what we could do with Hans devices and strapping drivers in and keeping drivers safe and building cars that are keeping drivers contained as they get into accidents. And that may have saved Ryan Newman's life. I don't know if 20 years ago, if that exact same accident would have resulted in a tragedy for the Ryan Newman and his family, but I do know that over the last 20 years, about 20 years since Dale Earnhardt died, no NASCAR driver has died on the track since that accident. And a lot to do with the fact that the sport said, let's do whatever we can. If there's a legacy to Dale Earnhardt, his death, it is the fact that drivers are much more safer now than ever before. Soft walls, and especially the way the cars are built. So that's just to start the hour with some good news. But there is going to be some bad news in the world of the NBA, because one coach's experiment in this trip to the pros is ending, and ending a lot sooner than a lot of people thought. We'll have that story coming up next on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Join us here on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Glad you could join us this morning. I'm sounding a little nasally. I'm sorry, I'm still overcoming this cold. But, you know, I mean, I'm persevering. I'm getting through it.
It's weather. Weather this time of the year, man, just unpredictable.
I hate it. So you know what it is? Is there's just a cloud of wetness.
Yeah, you know
that is all over Nashville. It's just rain, moist. It's gross.
You want to know how
gross
we solve it? We need to just take the show on the road and go to like a tropical climate for for these months.
Exactly. My friend
Suffer
Dave Preston
in Hawaii or something.
Yeah, my friend Dave Preston, who joins us occasionally, talk Washington sports from WTOP. He's in spring training in West Palm Beach, and he posted a fun picture of him with his laptop, his auto editing software, and sunscreen. And I thought, that's what I need.
Yeah,
like I need warm weather. I need like sunshine.
That sounds miserable, doesn't it?
Yeah, God, I mean, every day I wake up, it's gloomy. It's gross. Just wet.
Yeah, that's
how you get sick.
Here, you flip a coin.
Yeah,
and you need to do it every hour, because every hour is different from the next.
It's just nuts. Just nuts. So I'm going to survive through it. You know, I've had a few coughing fits, which is just driving me nuts.
Because that's what you do. It's Mamba mentality.
That's Mamba mentality. That's right. That is exactly right. So, the John Beilein experiment is now coming to an end with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Already?
54 games into the season on a five-year deal, and they're already planning, let's just end this thing. Yeah. It ain't working out. It is not working out. I thought this was going to work. I really did. I was fooled by this when the Cavaliers hired him out of Michigan. I was fooled by this because I thought that what the Cleveland Cavaliers wanted was a head coach of the college or kind of the college mindset, because they were a team that was going to have a lot of young players, and they wanted to be built up into NBA players. Like, not, they weren't college kids, but they weren't veterans. They weren't super veterans. And Beilein would have been perfect because he's a good teacher, right? He's a good college coach that might be able to use some of that college experience and to grow these players to what Cleveland was looking for. But it didn't work out because, again, the process of hiring a college coach, a very experienced college coach, to the pros, who believes that the college way of doing things, not from a strategic standpoint, just in the way you deal with players, was going to translate over, just did not work for the Cavaliers. And it's not working for Beilein, whose friends are saying he's miserable. Absolutely. He's 67 years old. That's too old to be miserable in your job, right? That's too old to be miserable in life.
Yeah,
you're supposed to be heading into the twilight of your years. You're supposed to be heading into a point where you're pretty much doing anything you want, whenever you want, at any time you want. And at 67, for him to have taken that plunge into the NBA and now realizing, oh, God, this was a huge mistake. This isn't working. My players aren't listening to me. I'm trying to instill some knowledge and they don't care. So a five-year, this is working out for both. The Cavaliers realize they made a mistake in hiring him, and Beilein realized he made a mistake in taking the job in the first place. So now they're working on a financial settlement. That's probably going to pay Beilein a lot of money because it was a five-year contract, but he gets to go free and go back to the NCAA game. But what a mistake this was for both sides. I really thought that this would be a good transition for him. Now, listen, if Beilein was hired by, a team like the Miami Heat or something like that, like a team that has veteran players and young players and really could contend, I would have said, let's wait and see how this goes. Because he's not a player's coach. That's not him. Like, he's not Brad Stevens. Like, Brad Stevens was a player's guy. He was a young guy coaching at Butler. He could relate to players. When he got to the NBA, he was a player's coach, realized how that was going to work. Players, adapted to him, liked him a lot. Beilein wasn't going to do that. Beilein yelled at his guys, screamed at his players, had to apologize for calling him a bunch of thugs, said he misspoke, but a lot of people think he didn't misspoke at all. Like, it just never worked. And once players tune you out in a league where they make a ton of money and they really run the show and they don't listen, they don't need to listen to you, you're never going to get them back. He was never going to reel that team back in. If he lost Kevin Love and anybody else, he was never going to get it back. So it's good for the Cavaliers to part ways with him, and it's good for Beilein to go back to realize he, at 67 years old, where he really was, where he really belonged. And that's back in the college game.
Yeah, but whatever happened to letting coaches just kind of work things out?
Well, that's the other thing. That's a good point. Like instead of, it seems like it's a really quick answer. Unless he went to them and said, look, I'm begging you.
Yeah, maybe
let me out
it.
Of this.
Hopefully that's it. But I mean, I look at it as like, okay, what were they expecting?
Right. He's 67 years old. Well, he's not going to relate to a 22-year-old kid.
Not only that, but they don't have any superstars on their team.
No.
I mean, right now they're poised for a great lottery pick once again.
They have the second worst record in the league, right? I mean, they're
only
have like 14 wins.
Because the worst team in the league is the Golden State Warriors, and 2 years ago, those two were in the finals.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding, right? I mean, 14 and 40. It's atrocious.
It's bad, but I mean, this is... Whenever you have a down team and you're changing over regime, you kind of expect, okay, that first year is kind of a throwaway year. Let's hope to get a good draft pick. Let's start rebuilding this team. They got a lot of young pieces. Bring in a high draft pick, and then see where that takes you in year two. And there's no time for that anymore.
Right, right. There were reports that he absolutely had no idea certain offensive plays and offensive systems and which would work and which wouldn't work. There's the famous clip of Kevin Love getting so frustrated in one offensive set where it was just like, this is ridiculous. What are we doing? But you're right in that, in the sense that, you know, both sides coming together, and maybe Beilein tried to hasten, you know, move this along. But maybe, but the cap 54 games into a 5-year contract, and they realize, oh, God, what a mistake. Like, this should have been really thought out by both sides, and Beilein should have realized a couple of things. Okay, he should, I don't know if he did or not. Maybe he did, so I don't want to give, I don't want to say he didn't. But at 67, I would guess he did not reach out to a number of other coaches that have made this transition to say, what am I in for? You know, what am I looking at when I go there? What works? What doesn't work? How do these guys respond? Because I can get a 17-year-old kid to respond when he gets to my program, an 18-year-old kid respond to get to my program. I can do that. Like, if they come to Michigan or they came to West Virginia when I was coaching there, I could, I was the authority figure. And so these guys listened to everything I said. But in the NBA, that's not the case. You better be, in some respects, in sort of in lockstep with what the players do and what they want to do. Otherwise, you won't make it. This, of all the sports, the NBA is more of a players' league than any of the others combined. I mean, it is that important that you relate to your players. Now, I'm not saying just let them run wild. We've seen some disciplinary guys who are tough to tighten up. But if you look at the last few championships that have been won, especially with Steve Kerr, Eric Spoelstra in Miami, I mean, these were guys that really just let their players shine, let their players go, you know, do whatever. They weren't like yelling and screaming and had their, you know, heel on the throat of these guys. No, that wasn't the philosophy. They'd let the superstars be superstars, and they sort of managed it as they went. Now, Beilein wasn't given superstars, but his method wasn't going to win anybody over. And God, but 54 games in, I'm sorry, that seems a little bizarre. But, I mean, I'm glad he realized now at 67 he wasn't trapped into a bad life. Like, like I said, he should be cruising along. But you know what stinks? It's when you leave a gig that you like and you enjoy for something better, and when you realize, oh, shoot, this isn't as good as I used to have it, and now I can't go back and get that again. Like, I'm not going to go quit and go back to being the coach at Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, like, Juwan Howard's going to be there. Even though Michigan is struggling, you're not going to fire Juwan Howard to bring Beilein back.
Where does he go to a mid-major school?
Yeah, that's a great question. Where does he go now?
Or does he go, you know what, I'm done.
I'll just chill out for a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe
isn't 67 the new 40? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe someone will take a flyer on him being an analyst.
Yeah.
If he's available now, they'll probably grab him for the NCAA tournament.
Sure, why not? See what he has to say about the, you know.
He was in the Final Four last year, wasn't he?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 2018. They lost to Villanova.
Yeah, Villanova.
Yeah.
He had
such incredible success. Right? I mean, and just said, listen, I want to try this. I think it'll work. It's a lot of money. I'm getting paid a bunch of money. And he got there, and all of a sudden, whoops, this isn't working. God, how miserable that must have been. Like, imagine if you're a coach and you're like, guys, we got to do, and you're looking around like, they're not listening to anything I'm saying. They're not listening to a thing. This is not working. Too bad. I like Beilein, too. I liked him at West Virginia a lot. I really did. And when he moved out of there to go to Michigan, I was like, this is going to work. I like Michigan because I like Beilein. And I thought this would work, too. I thought this would not work in the sense that the Cavaliers were going to be in contention or anything like that. But the philosophy of why Cleveland hired him in the first place. Build up the young talent. Get them ready. Get them into gear as we build this thing from the ground up again. But, I mean, look, he works for an owner in Dan Gilbert. Remember, Gilbert's kind of nuts. I mean, he wrote that famous letter when LeBron left saying, we'll win a championship before you do. And then he had to basically grovel to get LeBron to come back. I mean, it's, you know, so it's not surprising. This is like their fifth coach in the last 6 years. And revolving door.
That's Cleveland sports.
That's right. That's right.
Indians need to get on page.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. So it didn't work out for John Beilein and the Cleveland Cavaliers, which is just too bad. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Baseball is still floating around with this sign sealing scandal, and my God, it is like the wave of anger and bitterness. This is like a daily thing now to have who's going to say what about this disaster that Rob Manfred has created. But he did apologize for one thing, and I'll tell you about it next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, it's O-Reward Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop in today for store-wide savings, plus earn double O-Reward bonus points on all sale items like wiper blades, motor oil, tools, accessories, and more. Not an O-Rewards member yet? Sign up today online or in the store. Take advantage of Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's fast, easy, and free. But hurry, double points are only available for a limited time. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Look, back to the Beeline thing real quick. I don't blame Beeline for this whatsoever. I mean, look, he's a guy that was reaching his 60s and wanted to take a shot at the NBA and had an opportunity to take. He had been rumored to be a candidate for a job with the Atlanta Hawks. I think the Detroit Pistons at one point were interested in his services. He got an opportunity. He took it. It didn't work. And now he knows. Like, listen, I've said many times, I love doing this for a living, but if I ever had a chance to host a game show, I would take a chance. I'd love to host a game show. It's what I've wanted to do my whole life. When I was in high school, there used to be a game called Remote Control that was on MTV, and it was about television, and I actually created a version of that in school for study hall. And I had like a buzzer system and everything, and I ran the game. It was awesome. I loved it. I love game shows. But what if I get there and I go, God, I don't like doing this. This is boring. It's the same housewives and guys. I don't like dealing with this, right? But at least it's worth, you know, I'd take a shot. But, you know, what I would like about that gig is what we were talking about yesterday. Working, what, one day a week?
Yeah.
Banging out a whole bunch of shows?
Yeah, why not? You know? I mean, it's a long day.
Yeah.
Was it like the Wheel of Fortune? I think they take.
Yeah, exactly.
Four shows a month or something like that? Four days a month?
It seems like you can't be a Wink Martindale anymore, though. Like, remember, like, Wink Martindale and, like, those guys, those guys were game show hosts.
When they did all the revamp?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's on ABC, and they do Match Game and Pressure Luck. They're bringing stars in.
Exactly. So, you know, the days
Alec
of
Baldwin coming in and hosting. It's like, come on, man.
The day of, like, a kid like me who's like, man, I'd love to be the host of a game show. You can't do it because you have to be, like, a star in something else.
Yeah. In fact,
order to do it now.
There was a show I was watching pretty regularly during the day. I can't remember what it's called, something funny or whatever, right? And it has the panels. It's very, very similar to Match Game. But they have six comedians up there, and, you know, the comedian is asked a question, the comedian gives a good joke, and then gives his real answer, and you have to guess whether that person, what they're saying is true or false.
Oh, I got you.
Right? So it'd be very similar to Match Game. You know, there wasn't really too many fill in the blanks. It was always just, you know, I think he's right. No, I think he's wrong type of thing. But they had an actual game show host. And it was very weird to see.
Yeah, sure.
And because I would look at him because he's, you know, there's a panel of like John Lovitz, Howie Mandel. I can't remember the guy from Mike and Molly who has a new show.
Oh, yeah. I know who he is. Yeah. He's on Bob Hart's Abishola.
Yeah. So, I mean, they would have those type of guys up there. And, you know, and then there's this kid, basically. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's older than that, but I mean, he's just some random dude who's hosting a game show. And I'm like, well, that's just bizarre to see now. Why should that be bizarre?
Yeah, I know, I mean, right?
We grew up in an era where there were just game show hosts.
I know. Like, I don't remember some of their names, but I just would know them immediately.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember who hosted Pressure Luck, but if I saw him, I'd go, oh my God, that's the Pressure Luck guy from when I was a kid.
Mark Summers.
Mark Summers. He was one of my favorite interviews at the Super Bowl last year. Just because I went nuts. I was like, you're doing what I kind of wanted to do as a kid. Like, I loved game shows. It was part of being sick when I stayed home from school was there were game shows on all the way up until soap operas pretty much took over the network. But that's all I would watch.
By the way, real quick, the Pressure Luck.
Yes.
Peter Tomarkin.
Ah, there we go.
Tomarkin.
All right.
Dead.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
I know, neither did I. Dead.
Wow.
Died in 2006.
Amazing. Oh, my gosh.
He was only
He couldn't have been that old.
Nah. Born in 42, died in 2006. What, 42 right. years old?
Yeah.
Or 52 years old?
Yeah, my goodness. That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't know. I can't do math right now.
Well, we'll figure it out. But anyway, back to Beeline. It's taking a shot, right? My point is, he was 66 at the time that he moved on. He's 67 now. He was probably thinking, look, I'll never, if I can be content in the life I've created, which is building a successful basketball career at the college level, but I'll never know. I'll never know if I can be a head coach in the NBA at the highest level of basketball on the globe. Could I do it? Now he knows he's probably happier when this settlement is over and that he has that information now. He can say, look, I tried it. I didn't like it at all. That was not my thing. It may have worked for Brad Stevens and it may not have been his thing, but it wasn't mine. Here's another thing. Here's another interesting thing. You hope it doesn't ruin your legacy. That's one of the other problems, because you don't want to have to rush to get your legacy back. Beeline was one of the more, prominent coaches in the college game. And now you go to Cleveland, it's 54 games in, you haven't done anything, you've kind of failed, and you don't want that to define you. Rick Pitino was a very successful coach, right, at Providence, and then he went to the Knicks, and that didn't work out at all. Then he went to the Celtics, and he went to Kentucky, and he built it back up again, went to Louisville. Now he's, obviously has to build it back up again, but Jay Wright is the name a lot of people are buzzing about from Villanova. Now, Jay Wright has built himself a fantastic legacy at Villanova. But if he were to jump ship and go to a dysfunctional, awfully run NBA franchise like the Knicks, yep, he could do what Beeline did and go right back to coaching college. But you would also have this thing where, like, wow, Jay Wright was one of the more prominent coaches in college. Then he went to the Knicks. Then he kind of, he went off to somewhere else, right? You might remember where he went if he did well there. You might not remember where he went if he was kind of just middle of the road, right? Jerry Tarkanian went from UNLV to the Spurs and didn't make it, right? And if there was one guy who was, who's adept at dealing with pro athletes, it was Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV, okay? I mean, my goodness. But Tarkanian couldn't make it. It's a totally different mindset. Nick Saban, who had some experience in the NFL as an assistant, let's not forget. Saban, when he went to the Dolphins, it wasn't his first dive in the swimming pool of the NFL. He had been with on Belichick's staff in Cleveland. But he realized when he was with the Dolphins, maybe this isn't for me. Spurrier realized that when he went to the Redskins. Like, he went from Florida to Washington, went, I can't do this. I'm not doing this. I'm not dealing with these kind of guys, these kind of athletes. These are grown men. These are professionals. They need to be treated in a certain way, and I don't want to treat them that certain way. So I'll go back to the college game, and then went back to the college game. But it is worth the plunge if you can do it, if you just want to get it out of your system. But again, Beeline is one of the best basketball coaches in the game in current terms of the college level that we have in the country. And I just don't want this to be something that plagues him. I hope he lands on his feet really well, and I hope he gets back to leading a team to the tournament. Tarkanian did that with Fresno State, right? But once you take that plunge into the NBA and come back, I hope he's not bouncing around looking for a home. Oh, well, he landed at such and such state university. That didn't work out. Now he's gone off to this other school, and that's really not working out. Because as a college coach, he was great, and his Michigan teams really proved it. So it's, just worth the plunge. Rob Manfred has apologized for calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal, which is probably something he shouldn't have said to begin with. There's a scene in a movie years ago, years, years, years ago, and the movie was called Searching for Bobby Fischer. And it was about a young chess prodigy, and Joe Mantegna is the father, and Ben Kingsley is the teacher. And there's a moment where the little boy wants a certificate, and he really is excited to get these certificates. When he achieves something in chess by this teacher, he gets a certificate, and he really loves them. And there's one scene that is heartbreaking, and it's when Ben Kingsley starts throwing certificates at him, saying these are really worthless. You want 5? Here's 10. I just print them out. And the look on the kid's face is kind of heartbreaking. It's not heartbreaking that you call the World Series trophy a piece of metal, but it is when you start thinking about the guys who work to win it, the guys who hold it, the teams that showcase it, the teams that put it on display, the fans that get to look at it. It's not that it's a piece of metal. It means a lot more. He should have never called that to begin with.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you can join us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Basketball season's in full swing, and baseball is right around the corner. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. Sign up today, receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and pro sports. Every spread and every total, you can straight bet, parlay, and tease your way through the season. Those prop bets are out. There's even a prop bet on how many times the Astros are going to get plunked during the season. You can even bet futures for Major League Baseball, for example. The Yankees are the favorite to win the World Series, but you can take a look and a lot of the other odds for teams that are out there. Get the fastest to market odds updates and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over to the website today, use your mobile device and join. Use the promo code SBNation55. Receive your 50% welcome bonus, SBNation55, and get that 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, so this is a disaster for Major League Baseball. And look, I'm sorry to sound like a broken record because I feel like I've done this every day, you know, this week and some of parts of last week. And I'll be honest with you, I'll probably keep doing it as more and more prominent people are speaking at their media availability dates. All right, because this is getting serious. The Astros are not only getting pushed around and shoved around and screamed at by irate players. There's some serious anger that is floating around, and Rob Manfred has no control over this. Nick Markakis even spoke out on this. Here's what Nick Markakis said about what the Astros players need to have had happen to them.
To see something like that, it's damaging to baseball. It's anger. I feel like every single guy over there needs a beating.
Every single guy needs a beating. All right, you know what that means when they play the Astros.
Yep. When he said that, I'm picturing that scene in Airplane.
Yeah, right.
With the hysterical woman where they're all just lined up.
Yep.
Bring your own weapon.
All right, here's Markakis again saying everything was handled the wrong way.
I think the punishment and everything, I think just everything has been taken, everything's been handled the wrong way. You got two guys that are sitting at home that you can kind of, give them a little bit of leeway, and they're not in the game right now. And then you got the players who did it who are scot-free. I know there's a lot of political stuff behind it, but, it's wrong.
Well, he's wrong. There's four guys that are home right now because of this. Now, I don't know when he was saying two guys that are home, I don't know who he was talking about.
I think he's just referring to that because everyone is just looking at this like it's just the Astros.
It's just the Astros. So he's probably talking about Lunau and Hinch.
Yep.
But Alex Cora has been suspended and Carlos Beltran doesn't have a job anymore. So those are the four guys. But I think everyone is focusing on the Astros. In fact, Markakis is saying players now don't even support the Astros.
Those guys have a lot of talent over there. But to take it to that level is wrong. I know as players we do not agree with what they did. We don't stand behind them, and never will we support them for their actions. And I think they got off pretty easy. They're going to be able to go out there and compete with no ramifications at all, which is wrong. And I think the commissioner completely handled it the wrong way.
Now, this is where it gets really tricky. It was something we talked about yesterday. There was Nick Markakis right there saying he thought the commissioner handled it wrong. Yeah. They basically got away with it. Scot-free. We don't support them. Okay. But as it has been pointed out, there were no guidelines to this for the players. There is nothing in their collective bargaining agreement that says if you're caught doing this, you'll be suspended X amount of games. There was no crime and punishment that's in the collective bargaining agreement, right? So, this was something that was administered to general managers. You're responsible for the team. You're responsible for the conduct of the team. If this happens under your watch, this is what's going to happen to you. You want that to trickle down so that the players aren't doing this, but there were no ramifications built in the collective bargaining agreement. How quick is he willing to give Commissioner carte blanche power over all of the players in these kind of situations? Because when push comes to shove, will he support that? When push comes to shove, when the players' union's rep is saying to all the players, guys, in order for the Astros to get punished, we have to concede this much power to the commissioner over your playing careers. Let's see how many of them rally around that. Let's see how many of them jump up and down and go, yeah, take it. Take it.
Every, not only that, I mean, you can go a step further with that, too. You imagine this being in the NFL and a player speaking openly and honestly about their feelings about Roger Goodell.
Absolutely.
How quickly would that player be fined?
Of course.
And I mean, we have every, I mean, literally every Major League Baseball player outside the Astros organization is speaking ill of Rob Manfred.
They're all looking at him and saying, my God, you dropped the ball on this so badly. And all of us are mad. None of us find what the Astros accomplished legitimate. Some players have said, and we've been saying this for the last couple of days now, some players are saying that the title should be vacated. There's something should happen at least to sort of mark that this was a flawed title. The Yankees, which we'll get to in a second, are all saying that they feel cheated out of this from the 2017 ALCS. Whether this is now open season where you feel like you can say a little bit more and maybe get into some hyperbole, maybe exaggerate really how you feel about this, because why not? Everybody else is piling on. I'll pile on too. Remains to be seen. But again, go back to just the legal aspect of this in terms of suspending players. Every one of these guys on the Astros would have gotten suspended under these, what these guys are saying, what they want. So you suspend all these players. All of these players would have appealed. All of these players would have filed grievances and they would have won their cases because there is nothing written down. There's nothing in the bylines that say, guys, here are the list of things that we can punish you for. And now this is one of them. And as we talked to Steve Gardner yesterday, one of the reasons was because this was something that was really a problem for general managers and operations. Players didn't have access to cameras and video rooms and all. They just play baseball. They show up, swing the bat, field the ball, throw the ball. Everyone else in the organization that is really run by the GM, running the operations, they fit under that umbrella. So, like, for example, if a promotion went horribly wrong at an Astros game, just to use an example, if a promotion went terribly wrong, like the message was, oh my God, that's inappropriate for a family audience, for example, that wouldn't be on the players, right? You wouldn't expect the players to have anything to do with it. You would say, well, you know, the players are the players. This is a promotional department thing, which goes under the umbrella of the GM. So the GM, who's in charge of everything, he should probably have looked into this baseball operations, whatever. He's probably, you know, he's got to enact some discipline within his organization. That's the way baseball viewed electronic sign stealing. That this would have been a manager thing. It would have been a video room person. It would have been somebody else in tech. However it would work. The players, of course, would have benefited, but they wouldn't have orchestrated the whole thing. And so baseball didn't feel like it needed to tell the players, by the way, don't rig a electronic sign stealing system. We'd rather you not do that because they didn't think it would come from them. Now they were wrong. But are these players really willing to now say, listen, anything that comes up that is not under the collective bargaining agreement, just go with your own gut and go with your own discretion. I really doubt it. But if they're that angry and are willing to give power over to the commissioner on this so that all these guys on the Astros are suspended and punished in some capacity, then go ahead. But you're really going against the whole CBA and what it actually entitles the commissioner to do. But I just found this interesting. I mean, this is open season on the Astros. There is no solidarity with Union Brotherhood here. There is anger. There is, and again, didn't we talk about this yesterday too? How many of these guys heard the rumors throughout the entire 2017 season and 18 season and 19 season? I mean,
they all knew. They had to know.
And now they're acting as like, oh my God, I know. When I heard this a few weeks ago, I was appalled.
Yeah, with the Washington Nationals, were they the only ones that had the secret? And it's like, you know, just don't let this out. We'll just be tight-lipped about it. We're not going to share this with anybody. Of course not.
Yesterday, Steve Gardner told us 10 teams complained to Major League Baseball about what they heard and what they believe was happening with the Astros organization that season. 10.
Well, I can blame Markakis. He's been transferring from one team to another every single season, so maybe he just didn't land on the right team at the right time.
Does he still play for the Braves?
I have no idea what he plays for.
I don't think so.
I think he's gone to...
I don't know. I'll have to look him up, because he's becoming a journeyman-type player, too. I think he's still...
to the point, aren't these... The players, they're protected by the CBA, right?
They should be, right.
So the union is the one who kind of administers the punishment. The union kind of protects them from punishment?
Well, if the punishment is listed within the CBA, like steroids and other domestic violence and things like that, that's been agreed to in the CBA, then that comes from the commissioner's office. So again, like if you're caught with steroids, what the punishment is now in the guidelines of the collective bargaining agreement. We talk about this with the NFL, right? The NFL can still punish you for marijuana, and we'd like to see that relaxed. That can come in the next CBA. They can actually negotiate that and say, look, you can punish us, you can punish our players for this, this, and this, but if they get caught smoking dope, a 4-game suspension, 25% of the season, we'd rather that not be in there. And you can do that. You can actually do that. So even things like domestic violence, which is obviously a punishable offense in the real world, right, in real justice, but that even that suspension, as heinous as that crime is, even that suspension is negotiated, right, where you say if you're caught with this or any other crime or any other, you know, however it would work, you negotiate that in your collective bargaining. But as far as like within the rules, there's not really like a level of carte blanche that the commissioner has. A lot of stuff has to be laid out, and that's where the grievance would be won by the players, is that the players were – it's kind of silly to say the players weren't told this was not a thing to do, right? But that's kind of how it works. Like, you're not allowed to do this, but the players don't have it in their agreement to tell them they can't do it, even though it's against the rules. So they would lose any punishment that was administered, because the commissioner cannot say, you know what, you broke this rule, it's in the spirit of the game, and you're punished. The players go, well, where is that? Oh, well, it's not. We would win. I think the commissioner, but here's the thing. Why can't the commissioner punish anyway and just like have them file grievances? Let's just go through the process. Right, I'm going to punish you anyway. Even though I probably don't have it in my power to do it, I'll punish you anyway. And let's go through the whole process. Let's go through it. And every one of you can win your case, and I won't have a problem with it, but you're going to know I did it.
But at the same time, I do think about, and I wish we knew who that female reporter was that was asking Jim Crane that one question.
Remember? Oh, right. Yeah.
Back and forth. Where, you know, when she asked him, it's like, how come you didn't punish the players? And, you know, she gets that logistically, it doesn't make sense. You know, I was talking to my son about this yesterday, because he was asking me questions about it, and I was like, I really don't have all the answers. But I said, if you think about it this way, you know, if you took the 2017 Astros and say you suspended them all for a month, right? You suspended them all for a month. Who are the Astros going to put on the field?
That's right.
Their entire infield was part. I mean, they haven't had that much turnover since 2017. Or are you going to stagger it? Is it going to be, all right, Springer and Altuve, you guys are the first month. Bregman, Correa, you guys are the second month. I mean, you can't do that either. So I really don't know what the situation is. I mean, you can't ban them all from baseball. Could you?
No. Yeah, they'd have to field a team in some capacity.
I mean, I guess if they were betting on the game, you ban them all from baseball. But if they're cheating, you... I don't know. I don't even know.
And just can't call up your minor league guys and all of a sudden make them professionals.
Right.
And then just ship them back down. Like that. I'm sure there's some logistical nightmares that are involved in that in terms of contracts and what you'd owe.
Yeah. I mean, there's legal things. I mean, I don't know how long you have to be to be a Major League Baseball player to earn a pension. But, I mean, that could really hurt your team.
Sure. Sure.
So, if all of a sudden you have like you feel the minor league team for a month.
So, like I said, it's a mess, and baseball can't seem to get a handle on it, and that's a problem for Manfred. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, or 800-224-2004. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Say what you want about the hatred for the Astros, but it will drive up ticket sales, right? Everybody will want to see the Astros when they come to your town.
Yeah.
Have fun. Boo, bring in signs.
Rotten tomatoes, rotten cabbage.
Exactly. This was like Bonds. Remember Bonds when he was on that home run chase? Like, people were like, I hate Barry Bonds, but my God, every place he went, that place was packed. Every stadium was packed. Then you go on the road. I remember the Rockies put the Giants in their like upper tier ticket packages. So you could buy like, hey, buy the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Giants, you know, like that kind of thing where it's at premium prices where you can get discount tickets when the A's would come to town or whatever. And Coors Field, every time the Giants were in town, was like jam-packed. People would go to the concessions, they'd stop, they'd watch Bonds at the plate. Now you've got the Astros, they'll come into your town for three games, and you can bring signs and scream and holler and yell at them and call them cheaters. Fabulous roadshow. There's a part of me, though, that I don't feel bad for Rob Manfred. I don't want to be misquoted on this, but I can only imagine every day him waking up going, oh, my God.
Well, I mean, it's my God. I mean, you said it perfectly. This is just a nightmare. I mean, he thought maybe this would go away, and it hasn't.
Another large group of players are talking about.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, let's see who's going to say something today.
We'll have
the audio for you tomorrow. I mean, that's how crazy it is.
It is crazy. It's getting worse. He's got a player saying that the players on the team should get beat up. It's like I'm sure he's thinking to himself, oh yeah, this storm will blow over in the next day or two. Oh, this is going to be a good season.